Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari. Gopi Chanda Balabha, Gribhari Hari. Gopi Chanda Balabha, Gribhari Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvraj Ekachara Sotir Sada Shri Shimra's Dying Grace A.C. Bhakti Vinata Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Charya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda All glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Ma Om Vishnu Varaya Krishna Vasabhudale Srimati Bhakti Vranta Swami Tanamani Namasi Sarasvati Gaura Vanavacharani Yuvishesha Srimati Bhakti Vasthi Parvasitani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Hare Krishna. Well, thank you all so much for being here today. Today I'm going to talk about a topic which I say call Krishna's reciprocating in love with each living entity. And this is about the most wonderful quality of God, or Krishna, and that is His supreme mercy. Of all the qualities of the Lord, which probably means the most to us, to each one of us personally, sort of in this material world, struggling and suffering and whatever, is the incredible love and mercy that Krishna shows to every single one of us. So that mercy is manifested by the quality of love. And spiritual love is not a vague, ethereal, theoretical concept, but it's a very real thing. It's a very tangible relationship of love between God and every living entity. And that relationship, as we will read, is specifically developed according to the desire of every single jiva. So, we're going to read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 11. Okay, whoops. Let's see if I can find one here. This is small. Huh. Yayatam, we could just read it together if you want. I'll just stick with it. Yayatamang prapajyante tamstatai vabhajam yaham mamavartman uvartante manushya parta sarvasta. For the translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. Purport. Everyone is searching for Krishna in different aspects of his manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahma-jyoti effulgence as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally, according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocation of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with different types of worshipers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal, blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desire for activities. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Jagjeshvara. And those who are yogis seeking mystic power, they are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone, and all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Akama sarvakamo va mokshakamo daradi tivrena bhakti yogena vijeta purusham param. Whether one is without desire, the condition of the devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. Om Gyan Timurandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksarul Mitamina Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Panchakopa Trubhischa Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patidano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So Srila Prabhupada is discussing here that there are different degrees of realization of the Supreme. People who are looking for spiritual life, who are looking to try to understand what is transcendental, what is beyond the scope of this material, look in many different ways. And they find different answers according to their capacities, according to their desires, according to their different levels of understanding. So for different people, Krishna manifests different aspects of himself. And this can be based upon their particular level of advancement in the path of spiritual life, of self-realization. And it's also dependent upon their desire and motivation. So here, Srila Prabhupada is discussing at least three categories of those who are maybe seeking spiritual knowledge. First, he talks about the fruitive workers. Fruitive workers, they're doing karma yoga, or they simply are trying to do good works or good deeds to try to get some material gain. Now, of course, now we see people who do try to get material gain without any good works, just trying to exert whatever effort or influence they can for their own gain. They're not really, we would say, part of the spiritualists or people who are striving for spiritual life. But there are those who try to do good works and try to gain to higher positions, even to heavenly planets, etc. And of course, that's very limited, because even in the heavenly planets, one is limited because the cycle of birth and death is still there. Even when one goes to the planets of Indra, the heavenly planets, one, again, after one's good karma has burnt up, after that is finished, one comes back again to the lower planetary systems. Then there are the Gyanis, those who are seeking knowledge, freedom from the miseries of the material world, trying to get enlightened, processes of knowledge, meditation, austerity. So they're seeking hard to try to find God or find through an impersonal understanding. Then there are the devotees. The devotees seek to know God, to love God, and to serve God. So it's a very, very different orientation. So that, of course, we all have some motivation yet as we're still impure, as we're working in the path of spiritual realization. But ideally, the devotee wants to come to the stage of pure service, where one is unmotivated, as I said, haitu kiya priyata, when service is unmotivated, uninterrupted, where one's constant endeavor is for the pleasure of God. And then, as is often said, one's own pleasure then follows, because there's this beautiful, perfect reciprocation of love between God and his devotees. So there are many ways to try to understand God, and that's what's being described in this verse. When Krishna says, everyone follows my path in all respects, it doesn't mean that every path is the same or every path leads to the same destination. You know, in other words, you know, if I get on a highway, you know, heading straight east, what direction are we? I'm not getting up in California, right? In other words, all directions, all paths do not lead to the same destination. But what Krishna is saying is, he is the controller of the results of all of these paths. Wherever one wants to end up, whatever that goal is, it must be done through the grace, through the mercy, and through the sanction of Krishna. Krishna is the supreme control of everything, so no one can make advancement in any path without going through Krishna in some way, whatever one's realization or understanding of God is. So often our understanding of God is very covered, or it's very conditioned through a certain lens or focus of the way that we look upon the world, right? In other words, we have what is called as the modes of nature, the gunas, passion, ignorance, and goodness. Anyway, there's all the different material elements. There's our material senses, which all operate in different ways. So everybody has different ways of looking at the world, different ways of understanding, different perceptions than this material world. You know, so that vision is not clear. It's not often, it doesn't normally see absolute truth, because it's a limited vision and perspective that only may see a certain aspect of truth. So even those who are meditators or doing austerities, they're studying scripture, they may have a certain understanding trying to reach Brahman. But that's only one aspect of God. It's not the full understanding. Or one may be meditating, trying to see Krishna in the heart, which is very nice, it's very advanced. That still is not a complete aspect. So everybody is seen according to the coloring of their own vision. It's like there's a very famous story probably everybody's heard about the blind man and the elephant. This is from India, I think it's in some of the Buddhist and Hindu different scriptures and writings. That there are six blind men, and they come across an elephant. They've heard of an elephant, but they've never really seen one because they can't see, they're blind. So they go up and they touch the elephant to try to, you know, discover through whatever sensory powers they have what it is. So the first blind man puts his hands on the side of the elephant and says, well, now I know all about him. He's exactly like a wall. The second blind man feels a tusk. He says, no, he's not like a wall. He's round and smooth and sharp. He's like a spear. The third man feels a trunk. He says, you're both wrong. He's like a snake. The fourth blind man feels his leg. He says, oh, how blind you are. He's round and tall like a tree. And the fifth man feels his ear and says, he's like a great fan. And the sixth blind man feels the tail, says, this elephant is not like a wall or a spear or a snake or a tree or a fan. you're all wrong. I know exactly what it is. He's exactly like a rope, because he has hold of the tail. And then they proceed to argue amongst themselves, each thinking they are right. So, of course, this is a allegory of how we all have our own perceptions, and we only perhaps see a little bit of the whole. And particularly, we have very limited vision. You know, we have, of course, the four famous defects that are mentioned throughout our scriptures. We're all subject to mistake, to illusion, to the cheating propensity, etc. So we have this covering of the material energy around us, and we want to somehow get through that to the spiritual energy, to understand pure spiritual energy of God. How do we do that? Now, right now, a nice example that's given is the example of the clouds and the sun. The clouds, how are clouds created? They're created by evaporation of large bodies of water by the sun, right? Okay, you're near an ocean, large body of water, whatever it might be. Anyway, the sun evaporates water and it becomes a cloud or fog. Some we see a lot of times fog here in the morning. So our vision is completely covered. We can't see the sun because of that cloud covering. But the sun is aloof. The sun is above the clouds and it's not covered. It's seen everything. Now, eventually, the sun may burn away the clouds and then it reveals itself. So you can also even, or you could say even like at nighttime. At nighttime, you can't see yourself, you can't see anything else, you can't see the sun. Once the sun rises, first you get a little glimmer of seeing things around you. Then you can see yourself, you know, when it's like dawn. And then finally the sun fully rises and you see the sun in total. So the process of self-realization, of spiritual understanding is somewhat like that. But as you can see, it is dependent upon the sun revealing itself. Therefore, in the same way, it is dependent upon God revealing himself. So Krishna manifests multiple energies, multiple forms, multiple incarnations. Just as we said, he has his impersonal feature. He has his feature as the super soul, the Paramatma within the heart. And he has his feature of Bhagavan, of his personal form. So these three principal features are described in Bhagavatam 1-11. Didati tat tatva vidas tatvam yaj genamadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So it's understood that Brahman and Paramatma are partial understandings of Krishna, and they are aspects of the truth. We don't say that's wrong, that it's illusory. No, it's true. Krishna has his Brahman feature. He has his impersonal feature. That's one of his aspects. He is the super soul within the heart. In the heart of the yogis or the meditators or whatever, that source of knowledge that comes within us from the super soul, that's one of his features. But above that is ultimately Bhagavan, the pure original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Brahma Jyoti is this glowing effulgence of the Supreme Lord. And the one who is a meditator or jnani wants to merge into that undifferentiated oneness of Brahman. Now, that destination, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, he calls it spiritual suicide. Sounds very strong, but it doesn't sound like a place we really want to go, does it? Why is it spiritual suicide, quote unquote? Because one wants to lose one's identity. The impersonalist understanding is whatever the identity that we think we possess is just the curtain of Maya. It's just illusion. You know, we are all part of this one undifferentiated Brahman, but in illusion, somehow or another, we think that we're these individuals, and when we become self-realized, we'll give up that false misapprehension and once again merge into Brahman. Now, how Brahman ever became under illusion, etc., there's so many questions. I mean, the theory does not hold up under close scrutiny, of course, but that's what they purport. Now, the Bhagavad Gita tells us something very different. Krishna's teachings really begin in the second chapter, verse 2:11, is when Sri Bhagavanavacha, when after the whole setting of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna begins to speak. First, he says, Arjuna, You're speaking learned words like a learned man, but you're basically, you're basically a fool. You basically don't know what you're talking about. So the very first thing he tells him is 2:12. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So that's the first real verse that Krishna speaks. That's the foundation of spiritual understanding. Never was a time when I did not exist. In other words, Krishna is the supreme. He exists eternally. He is the original personality. He's the Adi Purusham. He is the Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes. He is the original eternal. He says, nor you, nor all these kings. So what does that mean? It means the living entity is also eternal. Didn't come into being at a certain time in history or cease to exist at a certain time of history. Just as God is eternal, we are his parts and parcels, we are also eternal. So both are eternal. Never in the future shall cease to be. So he's trying to first teach Arjuna and all of us. Of course, Arjuna really already knows this, but he's through Arjuna, he's teaching the rest of the world about how we differ from the body, how the spirit soul is the eternal spark within the limited, finite, material body. Okay? So, that really totally undermines the idea of impersonalism. You know, that in other words, that we would cease, that our very existence would cease to be at a certain time. Now, how that's an attractive concept, anyone, I really am not clear. But nevertheless, that's propounded by many, many people. So, of course, the Paramatma realization is a little more advanced. It's seeing Krishna within the heart as the Paramatma, the four-armed Vishnu form of Shiradaksha Vishnu, who is Paramatma within the heart, and the source of all spiritual knowledge. Bhagavan is complete realization. It means one who is full of all opulences. His form is completely spiritual, and it contains all others. It contains Paramatma, it contains Brahman. He manifests his original form, his qualities, his holy dham, his pastimes, his relationships, his devotees. All of this comes with Krishna. And his main, he has many, many energies, of course, and there's many ways they can be broken down. It's quite a study of Krishna's energy, variegated energies. But three of the principal ones we read about are Satchitananda, that he's eternal, he's full of knowledge, and he's ananda, full of bliss, happiness. In fact, one of the nicest, succinct descriptions of who, what God is the is from, no, why did I say Shri Upanishad? This is the first verse of Brahma Samhita. Okay, here we go. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he's the prime cause of all causes. These are all, each one of these is little nuggets. These are great concepts. Sarvakarana Karanam, a cause of all causes. People say, well, who created this? Well, you know, okay, who created God? Well, no, you can't say who created God, because if you find the person who created God, that's God, right? So if you go all the way back as far as you can, the original creator, the original cause of everything is Krishna. He is Anadir Govinda. He's the origin of all. There is no other origin. And he's the supreme controller, Ishvara, Paramakrishna. His name is Govinda. Govinda, now why do they say Govinda in here? Govinda specifically is the master of the cows, right? That specifically says that this Krishna, who is the cowherd boy in Vrindavan, this is who we're talking about. This is the original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? And prime cause of all causes. And he has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. Satchitananda Vigraha. Now, the Vigraha is interesting. Vigraha basically means form. Like the deities, we say the Arch of Vigraha. In other words, it's the form, right? It's a visible form, Vigraha. So when we say Satchitananda Vigraha, we mean not just some vague energy or light or something that's eternal, full of knowledge. We mean his form. And what is that form? That form is Krishna. That is the original form. So one who's Brahman realized understands Sat, existence. One who's Paramatma realized understands Sat and Chit, knowledge. Because Paramatma gives knowledge within the heart. and one who knows Bhagavan Krishna knows Sat Chit Ananda, eternity, knowledge, and experiences full bliss and happiness from relationship. Because only in the knowledge of Krishna, the form of Krishna Bhagavan, is that full realization of relationship there. And that is really what makes such a deep understanding and such a wonderful thing. Because the deepest understanding of our Vaishnava literature is this idea of personalism. God is a person, we are persons, and there's an eternal personal relationship between Krishna and the jiva, the living entity. So we all experience relationships. We experience relationships in our life. We have children, we have wives, we have husbands, we have friends, we have teachers, we have relationships in so many ways. Where do these come from? The origin is from Krishna. Everything is coming, is an emanation of Krishna, and everything in this material world is considered a reflection of Krishna. Sometimes it's called a perverted reflection. Not perverted like something strangely wrong with it, but perverted in the sense that it's not quite right. In other words, in the spiritual world, everything is perfect. These relationships have no inebrieties, they have no difficulties, they have no You know those rough edges that are in relationships? Like, well, we're usually really good friends, but we had a big fight yesterday, and I don't know if I really like them, so none of that goes on. In other words, they're relationships in their purity, in their essence. They're the essential prototype of relationships that we see reflections of in this material world. Now, these relationships, Prabhupada mentions the five basic rasas that we see in the material world and are there within the spiritual world. Dasya ras, relationship of master and servant. Of course, we're all servants of God. So servitude is there in all of the rasas, really. But it's real prominent in dasya ras, where one really just wants to serve God in awe and reverence and, you know. And then we have in Vrindavan these very intimate relationships, like vatsalya rasa, where one wants to be the parent of Krishna, like Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. We have the Sakya Rasa, like the coward boys, who have this wonderful friendship relationship. And then we have Madhurya Rasa, which is the relationship of conjugal love, like the gopis and the queens in Dwarka, who want to be lovers or wives, as the case may be, of Krishna. Now you think, because Krishna enjoys these relationships. He's not in need of them. Krishna is described as Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. He's totally complete. He's Purnam. So why does he have all these relationships? Why have billions and billions of living entities? And because that is his nature, the very constitutional nature of God, at least from what we understand, you know, from our acharyas and the scriptures, is to expand love. And spiritual love is technically called prema. So Krishna basically emanates prema, and in relationship with his devotees, and his shaktis, that prema expands unlimitedly. So his enjoyment expands unlimitedly. And again, I've always thought it's such a wonderful thing. God's the complete controller. He could do anything he wants. He could have it. And what does he want? He only wants to love us and have us love him. That's a pretty wonderful thing, you know, when you contemplate that. In other words, the nature of reality is pretty good. You know, so it's like, that's what we want. And because it is our very nature, it is what we want, and it's what will satisfy us. Now, but it's not, we say there's five relationships, but it's not like, okay, well, I'll make five. Of course, he doesn't sit down and make these. They just sort of eternally happen. And how we understand this, you can't. It's called achinta, you know, inconceivable. At some time or another, at some point, Krishna expands all of this, all the jivas emanate from him, all of his shaktis, the gopis, Radharani, Balaram, everyone comes from him. I mean, you know, it's not quite that simple, but it's not that they say, it's like there's five relationships. No, there's thousands and millions and billions of relationships for every living entity. As you read some of the different pastimes, even in the 10th canto, like in Krishna book, there's all of these relationships and they're all a little bit different. And then when you get into some of the Goswami's books where they break it all down, all these little intricate details of this relationship mixed with this one and that one, it's like we know. We understand there's all kinds of relationships. Let's say you have 10 friends, if you're lucky. Okay, maybe you have 5 friends. Let's be real. No. Anyway, you have a few friends. Is every friendship relationship exactly the same? No. A little different, aren't they? Some are a little closer, some a little this, some are this, some it's more like in this, you know. And so that's it with Krishna. In fact, Sanatana Goswami, in his Brihat Vaishnava Toshini, which is commentary on the 10th canto, and Brahma's Prayers, chapter 14, the 7th prayer, very famous one where Brahma's saying, you know, you can't count all the particles of sand on the, you know, and all the stars in the sky. Nobody can count these. Krishna is so unlimited. Anyway, that's the verse that Brahma is speaking. Sanatana Goswami says, the meaning is this. The Lord reveals qualities suitable for the benefit of that jiva. The jivas are unlimited, and their natures are unlimited, and their conditions are unlimited. Thus, your qualities, he's speaking to Krishna, that you reveal for each of them are unlimited. It is not possible to count them. So there's unlimited qualities that Krishna manifests for unlimited numbers of jivas. Isn't that amazing? I mean, if we really think about the amazing qualities of Krishna, there's a certain point when your mind and intelligence just, you know, can't go there anymore. It's too much for us to understand, to comprehend in these material bodies almost, in these material subtle bodies. But we know that Krishna expands in the heart of every living entity and into every atom. I was just reading that in one of the commentaries the other day. Into every single atom, the Paramatma expands. So even the Paramatma expands into billions and billions. And when Paramatma is giving you some realization or some understanding or some direction, which Krishna, he is. Krishna says, I'm directing the wanderings of all living entities. He's directing every one of us, billions and billions. And then he has a personal relationship with each one of us, with each one of his billions and billions of devotees. So it's really amazing that he manifests a quality suitable and desired for each living entity. So, I'm going to run out of time here. How can we know Krishna and enter into our spiritual relationship? You can't force Krishna. There's no particular activity that's going to make him. You can't say, Krishna, come here, I want to see you. You can't meditate. If I meditate, how many years do I have to meditate to see Krishna? You know, it's nothing mechanical like that. In the Bhagavad Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami quotes Katupanishad 1.2.23, says, the Lord reveals his form to the person who the Lord chooses. And you go, okay, well, that sounds pretty arbitrary. But not really, because who does he choose? Further, Jiva says, bhakti alone brings the Lord, and bhakti alone enables one to see him. So who he chooses is one who is filled with bhakti, devotion, love and devotion. And in this purport we just read, Srila Prabhupada said Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. So it's not a mystery. It's not arbitrary. If one purely surrenders to Krishna, right, as he's saying here, one, then Krishna reciprocates. In a purport to 4.3.23, Srila Prabhupada says, his, by his sweet will, he reveals himself by his internal potency, being satisfied by the transcendental loving service of the devotee. Excuse me. And even Bhagavad Gita 11.54, Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So, this idea that we are able to actually come in contact with God, to be able to ultimately see God when we become sufficiently purified, sufficiently surrendered, is very wonderful. And even greater than that idea of knowing or seeing God is, I think, is his loving reciprocation. So, our verse today says, as they surrender to me, I reward accordingly. So, Krishna's devotees are fully surrendered to him. Therefore, there's a full exchange of loving relationships. And even more remarkable, Krishna exchanges love in the manner, the relationship desired by the jivas. Right? So, we have to become purified to reach this state. And right now, like here's this purport of 4.3.23 that I was just reading. I'll try to condense it here. Prabhupada says, now one may inquire that since factually the devotee has the same material existential body, how is it possible for these materialistic eyes to become purified by devotional service? Good question. I have material eyes, how am I going to see something that's spiritual? The example stated by Lord Chaitanya is that devotional service cleanses the mirror of the mind. In a clean mirror, one can see one's face distinctly. Similarly, simply by cleansing the mirror of the mind, one can have a clear conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can understand it's this cleansing or clearing process of the mind. All the dust is basically brushed away by the process of bhakti, which of course begins with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, the nine process of devotional service you've heard over and over. Hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna. It's actually, as Prabhupada said, simple for the simple, difficult for the crooked. In other words, you can make Krishna consciousness difficult, or you can make it simple. I try to like to make it simple because my mind's fairly simple. You know, hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna. That will help us. That will help us to clear the mind, break down all these anartas, all of this material attachments that we have, and actually understand, begin to develop our relationship with Krishna. So this understanding relationship is very basic bhakti yoga. And these relationships are called rasa. We have rasa with Krishna, and we develop that, and part of the way that we develop is by hearing. So we can read about, we can hear Krishna's relationships with devotees, Srimad Bhagavatam particularly. 10th canto is filled, and all the other cantos too, different relationships that Krishna has with his devotees. So we can see how pure devotees act, we can see how Krishna acts. In other words, it's all there for us to understand. Now, sometimes people assume that Krishna is just acting like a human being, like when Krishna's playing like he's a baby with Mother Yashoda, playing with a car. No, he's not playing. That's projecting our nature on God. It's called anthropomorphism, or sometimes anthrotheism, which means that we project ourselves like we have God-like qualities. But the reality is that God has a spiritual form without material qualities, and he is involved and engaged in these relationships out of love. I mean, it's his enjoyment, you know? You know, on the side, he's got to do things like create universes, you know? But that's not what's really fun for him. What's fun for him is playing with the cowboys in Vrindavan, or with the gopis, or with, you know, or with Arjuna on the battlefield even. Even that's like, you know, in other words, because that's all based on rasa and relationship, right? So Krishna's base, you know, his relationships are the basis of our human interactions, and the material world is a reflection of that eternal reality. And we experience those relationships because Krishna has those relationships, right? So there's one other thing that's very remarkable about Krishna's relationship I want to end with, and that is to his devotees who are very purified, who are very sincere, who are very surrendered, devotees totally dedicated to him, he gives himself to his devotees. Think about that. Supreme Personality of Godhead, control of all material and spiritual universes, Aham Sarvashapravo Matak Sarvam Bhavartate. Krishna frees everyone from bondage. He can deliver the entire world as Lord Chaitanya. But, as we saw in the Damodar Leela, he's bound by the love of his devotees. A couple of nice verses from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. This is 10.9.19. Shukadeva says, Maharaj Parikshit, this entire universe, with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Indra, is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotees. So he's the supreme controller, but only the devotee's love can control Krishna. How does it do it? Because he allows it. He allows himself to come under the control. Another really nice example is after the gopis' separation, reunion with Krishna in the 10th canto and the 31st to 35th to 36th chapters. He says, a very famous version of Parayaham Nirvajya Samyuja, I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. So Krishna allows himself to come under the control of his devotees out of love. How is this? Srila Prabhupada gave an example. He said somebody had told him the story of this Supreme Court judge in India, a very big, powerful person, Supreme Court judge. He's up on the bench, you know, handling out decisions, directing everybody. And then he had to go and visit him at his home for some reason. And the wife said, well, he's kind of busy right now. He's over in his study. And he's waiting and waiting, you know. Finally, he goes, I'm just going to go see. And he opens the door, and what does he see? The Supreme Court judge there is playing with his children. The children are riding on his back. He's playing like he's a horse, and they're controlling him. Like, okay, right? He's this big man, powerful person, making decisions about everybody's life. What does he enjoy doing? Coming home and playing with his children, and really sort of allows them. He's almost like under the control of his children out of love, right? So it's like that. Krishna allows himself to go under the control of his loving devotees. And of course, on the devotees' part, they want nothing except to please Krishna. They only want Krishna's happiness, and Krishna only wants his devotees' happiness. So this is the perfection of the spiritual world, right? And it's what we're all looking for. We look for it in so many places. We're not finding it so much in the material world, are we? Now, while we're in this material world, and we're not necessarily experiencing these wonderful relationships with Krishna at every moment, but we have relationships with devotees, we have relationships with other people, and those relationships should also be spiritual as much as possible. So there's affection in families, in a family but just between brothers and sisters, you have a common parent, you have a common... So in the same way, we are all part of Krishna's family. Krishna is the common father, the common parent of all of us, so there's a natural affection between all the living entities who are Krishna's children, his parts and parcels. And so the devotees experience spiritual happiness in relationship with devotees, with other devotees, with other like-minded people. So even if you're not a devotee, but you know, if you're someone who's on the spiritual path and you're looking for spiritual life, you find that that will be nourished by finding other people who are also of like mind, who are on a spiritual path. If we only associate with people who are materialistic and only want to, you know, do whatever they do, you can leave that to your own imagination. I don't know what people, well, I kind of do know what people do. But that's not going to help us. So we want good association. We want association with people that are going to uplift us, people who are going to help us to advance spiritually, who are going to encourage us, and we can encourage them. And we can enjoy those relationships, you know. In the spiritual world, they say, Prabhupada says, Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always with devotees, and devotees are always together. And there's wonderful relationships, you know. There's, you know, Nanda, and he's got his four brothers there, you know, Upananda and Sunanda and all of them, and they're all, you know, together, and the gopis are all consoling one another, and then the gopis go over and see Mother Yashoda, and they all cry together because Krishna's gone. And I mean, you know, it's like, the devotees, even in the spiritual world, where they're all just totally, totally fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna, they also have wonderful relationships with one another. That's the eternal nature of the spiritual world. You know, it's the nature of the spiritual world in Krishna is ever-expanding prema. So we have a lot to look forward to, a lot to keep working towards, keep trying to develop in our Krishna consciousness, trying to keep to remembering Krishna's lotus feet, and get out of this material world and go back to Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I know people want to go for prasadam, but anyone have a question or anything? Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. We know that the material creation is like 1/4 of the spiritual creation. The spiritual creation is 3/4.
I material quite hear it.
Material creation is 1/4 of the entire creation, right? Spiritual creation is 3/4 and material creation is 1/4.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. When we say...
Tripad, Vibhuti, and Ekpad. Yeah. Vibhuti, yeah.
Yeah. So here when we say the Lord and His creation is infinite, so if something is infinite, how can you say, let's say the spiritual creation is infinite and material creation is infinite, then you cannot say that, okay, once something is 1/4 of something. So how do you...
I understand your question. Yeah. I was reading about that recently, and one of the acharyas was just saying, it's basically, it's an example. It's to give you an idea of the difference of the relative amount. In other words, Krishna's spiritual energy is much greater. You know, let's say it's 3 times greater than material energy, although it's infinite. So both are infinite, but you got 1/4 infinite expanding, you got 3/4 infinite expanding. But I guess one is expanding at 3 times the rate of the other one, perhaps. I'm winging it here a little bit, but I think it's something like that.
Yeah. So can we understand that it is finite, but by the time we try to understand it is expanding, so we say that it is infinite.
That is what?
It is finite, but it is also infinite.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah,
chintaveda-veda-tava. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, I was just reading some of my experience class was saying that, you know, what was he saying? That, you know, Krishna's qualities are, you know, like, you know, can anyone understand, can Krishna understand his own qualities? Yes, because he's God, of course he can understand them, but yet they're always expanding, so he can't understand. Then he has to expand to understand himself more, and then he keeps expanding. So it's like that. Yeah. It's, again, it's a chinta, a shakti, beyond our material calculation of our limited brains.
Thank you, Prabhupada.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question.
Uh-oh.
Okay. That logic, the metaphor you gave about the elephant, mm-hmm. that each viewer has his own conclusion what the elephant mm-hmm. is. Now, if somebody say, okay, in that case, why not we take everybody's opinion in the world about God, and we put all together, will that be okay?
Well, not if they're all blind. The idea is that we have to be able to see. You know, in other words, we have to become enlightened. Our eyes have to become open. The light has to be there to be able to see. Because we can't possibly comprehend. Actually, that's what, isn't that what Lord Brahma's prayer is saying in 10.7? You know, 10.14.7?
Correct.
Yeah, that someone may say they can count this, they can count that. He says, as for I, and Lord Brahma, his brain is so big he has to have four heads to contain all of his massive intellectual power, right? And he says, I can't understand it, you know? So if Lord Brahma can't understand it, I don't know how we're going to put all of our little, you know, it's kind of like Prabhupada would say about, you know, you add up all the zeros together. What's zero plus zero plus zero? It's all zero, right? But you put a one in front of all the zeros and you have a million or whatever. The one is Krishna. You put Krishna there and then everything becomes known.
Yeah. I appreciate your, at least I heard probably three times similar thing from your lecture today, that yes, he is omnipotent, he is supreme controller, but he comes under control of devotee's love. Also you quoted 10.14.7, as you mentioned, that each soul has a particular quality. Mm-hmm. That means each soul is very dear and important.
Yeah.
And he is eager to reciprocate. So you have to be careful not to disrespect or put down or look down anybody. Because everybody has a relationship, and I appreciate that.
Well, that's the vision. Nice. That's the vision of Uttama Adhikari, and I can't pretend to have that vision. But that's at least what we should know is the highest vision, right? That is the understanding of the pure devotee. That everyone is part and parcel of God. Everybody has a relationship with God. Everyone is dear to God. You know. And so what the devotee wants to do is help those who are in ignorance, who don't understand that, revive that original Krishna consciousness. You know? In other words, our response to people's, you know, ignorance who are not on a higher stage is compassion, is mercy. In other words, the mercy of the spiritual master, we try to be instruments to try to help give that mercy out. Mm. Yeah.
Another point also you mentioned, it's very nice, beautiful class today. Another point was very attractive that Krishna ultimately controls, he's the supreme controller, in a sense that on our own we cannot reach him. But you said we do have a power also, because we can increase our bhakti to draw his attention and eventually it will overpower and he will be controlled. So it's very wonderful way to look at it, that mm-hmm. we cannot just blame, but saying that, I'm not yet received, but nobody's stopping me to increase my devotion.
Right.
So that's that way Krishna is actually ultimately reached. So both ways it goes, from Krishna's side and each soul, each devotee's side. Right. Yeah.
Yes,
that's very nice.
Point. Okay. Anything else? Anyone? Okay.
If we ever make it back to Golok, will we remember our God brothers, our relationship we had with our God brothers? And
I'm missing it.
Will we remember?
You mean the people that are now that were in the spiritual world? Will we remember them? I don't know. I really can't. I'm not qualified to answer that. You may. In some way, because, you know, there's different things said. Like in some way, I mean, Prabhupada said, when we go to the spiritual world, being in the material world is kind of like a blur, you know, it's kind of like a bad dream, you know. I mean, you know, so like there's some vague recollection. Oh, yeah, I guess I was there once. But, you don't like really want to dwell on a bad dream too long. You know, you kind of put it aside and, Although, our association with her, and I'm not saying it's a bad dream, our association with her, God, brothers, of course. Who else? Zero.
Thank you for the inspiring class. Yeah.
Sorry?
Thank you for the inspiring class. Just hearing the opportunity we have with the relationship with Krishna is so inspiring. So I was really thinking, there's so much opulence right now, material opulence going on, you know, in days old, people, the kings had this type of opulence, you know, now we can order anything from Amazon, we kind of, everyone can have whatever they want, their own cell phone, their own, you know, all these. So how does a devotee become satisfied with the material world so we can really turn to the holy name, we can really turn
and we become dissatisfied?
We have enough. Feel like I have enough. I'm not running because most people are running after relationship with things.
Old age is one thing that'll do it for you.
Yeah.
We to get old age, disease, and impending death. That kind of, you know, takes something away from the material world real fast. You know, makes you want to get a little serious and get out. No, but you know, but part of it is intelligence. You know, like you know, probably talk about the three kinds of intelligence. You know, some people, you know, can hear about it and they understand it and they do the right thing. Some people have to, you know, hear about it and see someone else, you know, have some difficulty, and some people have to experience themselves. So some of us have to experience actually the miseries of the material world. So we say, oh yeah, this is really miserable. But more intelligent is, don't wait until, you know, you experience every possible misery and, you know, and all your good fortune runs out, but to understand. And because it's really better to give up material voluntarily, right? It's really preferable. I mean, Krishna may just take it away from us, and that's Krishna. But if we just, you know, if we just say, okay, I don't need this, this is all I need, this is sufficient, I have sufficient enough, you know, I'm fed, I'm clothed, I'm situated, you know, we don't need to keep striving for more than what's required. And then just try to, I would say, you know, I'm going to backtrack a minute. I think Prabhupada always emphasized positive rather than negative. In other words, add Krishna consciousness. In other words, rather than saying, I got to take this away, what do I have to give up? Think, what do I need to add? How can I have more Krishna rather than how can I have more material objects? In other words, hearing, chanting, increasing one's spiritual activity, one's spiritual relationships, sadhana, you know, sadhusanga, relationships with all of these things. And then that sort of fills that need, it fills up that desire, you know. You know, because the nature of a living entity is to desire. It does not work to try to become desireless, right? That's the impersonal approach. And we know it doesn't work, especially in Kali Yuga. You know, I mean, you try to sit down and meditate and say, I'm desireless. How long does that last, you know? So better to just engage yourselves in Krishna consciousness as much as possible. And then they go away, you know, in time. It takes some time.
Yeah. Thinking, you know, appreciate your point of hearing and really, but then contemplating that hearing too. Really, we contemplate, harvest, and apply. Really try to apply what we're getting.
Yeah.
This is a really beautiful process.
Okay, anything else? Should end the class. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.